Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about something I know all of you can identify with. Yes, head trash. Oh, my goodness. What a title. This book is phenomenal. If you are in business, if you are dealing with people that really push your buttons. I think that's what I would like to say. I think this book, Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success. What is this all about? Well, my guest today, Timothy Thomas, is a man, along with his associate, Tish Squillero. By golly, these two have... Well, they're a powerful team. Let's find out more about them. Timothy, how did you and Tish ever get together on this?
That's a great question, Donna, and thank you for the opportunity to be on your show today. I appreciate it very much. A few years ago, Tish and I were having a conversation about a executive that she was dealing with in her management consulting firm, and as I listened to the story, I said to her, you know, Tish, it sounds like that guy has a lot of head trash. And Tish stopped in her tracks and said, that's an interesting word. Tell me more about that. And I shared with her that I had learned about the concept of head trash when I was a trainee in sales training. And she became even more intrigued about it and said, I think there's a book in there. And lo and behold, 3 years later, here is our book, Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success.
When I started this book, because there's this wonderful cover where you have the image of this black side view of a head, and you've got control and security, arrogance, paranoia, anger, fear, and guilt. And I said, okay, what is it that's going on here? Now, I do want my audience to know that you started working in leadership consulting in 2003. You have quite an extensive background in leadership training, and also Tish, she's been involved with it for a lot of years herself, and I think that both of you have gone through an awareness that the paradigms of the past that sort of denoted the leader, and you bring out the example of John Wayne and John Ford, you know, in a movie that, of course, these were the old Westerns that, by golly, you just told people what to do, and they were just supposed to do it. I think of the attitudes of many people that come out of business schools thinking that they have got to have this very domineering attitude that it's my way or the highway. And I know many people listening to this show, just like me, have experienced individuals like that. And boy, it shuts you down real fast. If you're working for someone with that kind of a demeanor, it's really tough. What is one of the most interesting stories that you have related to this? Because before we went on the air, I was talking to you about something and about having had experiences like this, and you said, Donna, the good news is, yes, the bad news is those people exist. The good news is that we can make a difference and people can shift out of these behaviors. Give us a scenario, your worst-case scenario that ended up being a great victory.
Well, we have a couple of those, but I think the most impressive one was a woman executive that we worked with a few years back who, from all intents and purposes, to look at her from the outside, she was incredibly accomplished, very successful in what she did, an expert in her field. And yet she suffered from one of the toughest forms of head trash, which is insecurity, which you can read about in detail in the book. She really believed that at any moment someone was going to enter her executive suite, tap her on the shoulder and say, you've walked through the wrong door, you're not really an executive. And she really, we call it the imposter syndrome. Leaders who within feel insecure and feel like they're imposters. And so over a period of time, we worked with her intensively to help her to really understand her internal value and how wonderful she really was as a leader and as a person. And over time, she became more and more comfortable in her skin, which allowed her to lead her team much more effectively, and she experienced even greater success than she had already had.
Well, and that's wonderful to know. I had the chuckle, and this is towards the end of your book, about one executive that was known as the tyrant from hell. I'm paraphrasing it for you.
Yes.
And I loved your comment about having worked with her that there were still times you had to peel her off the ceiling because she'd go into these rages. And that is something you bring out in the book. That's one of many aspects. And this is, my goodness, I've had clients that have had superiors of this dispositioning. And you wonder, how in the world can anyone run a company, male or female, and expect to get cooperation like this from people? And you're going to lose so many good people. They're going to say, I'm not going to be abused. I'll take my skills and go someplace else. Let's talk about anger, because so many times there is a suppression within an individual, and just a denial. This is the way I'm supposed to be. This is what a leader does. It's not a leader. That's not a leader at all. I mean, we have the stories that we go through history. You look at different people that have had those patterns. Eventually, there's a great deal of destruction that comes in after that. I mean, governments have fallen because of that kind of an attitude and action. So,
including their own destruction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's go into that, because that is something that, man, anger is a big, big thing. I mean, I've seen it in gang groups. I've seen it in families, but in business, and it's all bad. So let's look at this.
Yeah, so in our book, we talk a lot about, in the anger chapter, that there are many forms of anger. Of course, there's the explosive type person, which you just described a moment ago, and it really creates a culture of fear and anxiety and what we call cover your assets, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about, you know, the need to please the beast, and so we do all kinds of workarounds to keep the angry tyrant, quiet and under control. But, you know, there are other forms, you know, as well, Donna, including what I call the silent angry person, which is the type of person who may never raise his or her voice,
mm-hmm.
but through their body language and facial expressions and huffing and puffing sounds that they make, they might as well be screaming at others.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have another form of anger, which we call the passive-aggressive person, who appears to be all sweet and smiles, and in the meantime is doing things behind the scene that is hurting others, and it's really rooted in anger. And all of these forms, as I said, create a culture characterized by fear and anxiety, lack of risk-taking, and ultimately what happens is the employees become what we call compliant as opposed to engaged. And as you said earlier, the ultimate destruction to a business is you lose good people. I mean,
mm-hmm.
as you said, people do not want to stay around to be abused. And so you lose good people, which, of course, hurts your bottom line in many ways.
It really does. And I like to think that there is what I call a business cultural shift. And I've heard comments made by individuals through the years saying, well, you can't be namby-pamby with people. You have to make sure that they know who's boss. Well, anybody, if you're wise when you're in business, you realize you can't stand alone. It just isn't possible. We're all interdependent. And developing that aspect of cooperation, getting frustrated can happen in life. I mean, there's just no way you're going to go through business with a la-di-la Wizard of Oz attitude. It's not going to happen. You're going to find that there are going to be challenges, and there are going to be people that are not necessarily the best in your business. And there are times that you need to move forward. But you also cover in your book an aspect of control. Now, I really have to chuckle on this one, because I've known of so many various situations whether it's been in police work to Fortune 500 companies, where people have absolutely established their own little fiefdom, and that's it. God help anybody that does not bow before the king or queen of this little fiefdom. It must only be one little square foot of something, but by golly, it's their square foot. And, you know, I looked at it. Let's talk about control, because, oh, that is something I can't tell you how many people have said, I've got this micromanager. It's driving me nuts. They have to do everything. I don't feel like I've all my education, all my skills, they're just a waste. Why should I be here?
Yeah, why bother, right?
Yeah.
Why bother? We find in our work that the two most common forms of head trash are control and fear, and they're often very closely related.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have a concept in our book called Head Trash Cocktails, which is when you have, you know, more than one form of head trash operating in your life. And a common head trash cocktail is control with a fear chaser.
Oh, yeah.
We like to call it. And control really is rooted in a need for the leader to have his or her hand in everything in the organization. And it's oftentimes rooted in fear. And that's why it's a cocktail. The two of them go together. Fear of making the wrong decision, fear of losing business. The number of fears is myriad. And what that forces the leader to do is to have a desire to be involved in everything. And micromanaging is a great word. We see a lot of that, and it usually is rooted in fear coming out in control. And again, hurts the leader's credibility, hurts the functioning of the team, which ultimately hurts the bottom line.
You say in the book, a company's culture is the behavior of its leaders. There's the old axiom, everything starts at the top and permeates the organization. And if you have a lack of ethics in the organization, you have to look to the management. If you are finding that things, and we've got stuff going on today that we're listening to in the news, you have to go to the top. You have to go to who's at the top of the chain. Who is the one that's setting the standards? What are they doing? How is it being done? And it is something that really bears looking at. Now, you and Tish have had so many different environments that you've been in. What prompts someone to come to you and say, hey, I've got a problem? Normally, people will say, I don't have a problem. It's them.
It's usually, Donna, when personal pain gets to the point where they have to do something, right? So the business is in a tailspin. The leader has lost a group of, you know, really high performers. Sometimes even the leader is having, you know, problems in their personal life in addition to their business life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they reach out. It's when the pain threshold gets to the point where they've got to do something. It breaks through the denial. And that's usually when we're brought in. And it happens a lot more often than you would think.
Well, and that brings up a comment that you have in your book. You say insecure people often become leaders. And my husband likes to describe them as sprinters. Mm. He says they'll often be the real aggressive ones, the rah, rah, rah ones. They may have all kinds of degrees or various things. But he said they're good at talk, but they're not really good at performance. They honestly do not know how to lead. It's as if they've developed this persona and this, you know, just by putting themselves out in front all the time, people think, wow, this is going to make a good leader. And he said they're not a leader. They don't have the qualities of real good leadership, but it takes time to observe that. You say sheer determination and resilience enable insecure people to become leaders.
That's
well,
right.
I think if we're out on a battlefield, we wouldn't want someone insecure giving us orders, would we?
No, we would not. And oftentimes in industry, as you described, it's those charismatic leaders, often with what appears to be high levels of confidence and security and leadership skills that you know, those behaviors get rewarded, right? And mm-hmm. promotions follow. But ultimately, unless the leader works with those feelings of insecurity, in the end, the house of cards will come down. Because as you said, people know, right? People can sniff it out. And at some point, the insecure leader will start to do things that really hurt his or her credibility and hurt the team.
Now, you bring up, right at the very beginning of the book, one of the keys that I think goes along with often the very insecure individual, and that is arrogance. Mm. And the big A is something that creates irritation really, really fast. And just what we were talking about, let's talk about arrogance. Because there's a difference between arrogance and assertiveness.
Right, and, or arrogance and confidence, right? We want our leaders to be confident and assertive, but who wants to be in an office or in a meeting day in and day out, you know, being told that the leader is the smartest person in the room, just ask him or her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just do it his or her way because that's the right way. And, you know, pretty soon people throw up their hands in disgust and say, you know, what's the use? We're just going to wind up doing it the way he or she wants to do it anyway, because they're the all-knowing, all-wise person. And that you're right, that can get extremely frustrating for people, and they become disengaged in their work with the arrogant leader.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Now, you and Tish have your own way of presenting what skills and talents when you're working with people that you like to bring to. Tish says she's committed to change. She likes to support the leader, whoever that leader might be, or leaders, their employees and the business, and wants them to know that one of her jobs is to influence people to be aware of things differently, to change their thinking, which is going to change their behavior. And you like to say that you've been called the velvet hammer. You like to deliver a tough message, but you like to do it with compassion and humor. And I think both of you have approaches that make you as a team a very good collaborative unit. And I also liked what you brought out about Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. Now, tragically, he died from pancreatic cancer. Now, this is a man who was, in many ways, considered a genius. But he was really arrogant. He was really very hard on people. Why do we make gods? Is it because he made so much money?
Well, I think that's a piece of it. I think that Apple was incredibly successful when he worked there. I often wonder, though, had he been more of a collaborative leader and been less arrogant and more humble, had the company been even more successful. And, you know, in his book, sadly, he writes about how, you know, his personal life, there were lots of tragedies and lots of difficulties. And, you know, I think that in the end, the type of head trash that we talk about in our book, when it's not dealt with, will have damage in your business, in your family, in your personal life, in your community life. You know, we never worked with Steve Jobs, so I can't accurately diagnose him as, you know, having arrogance head trash, although he freely admitted he was an arrogant leader in the biography. But, you know, again, we wonder how much more successful he could have been and if his personal life would have been better had he chosen to behave in a different way.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But I find there's often people will say, oh, this is great. They emulate individuals, make heroes out of someone who has belittled people, who has literally used people as a doormat. You go through history, and I'm always intrigued at the amount of, what do I want to say, praise that will be given even to the vilest of human beings because they were able to, quote-unquote, conquer. But again, it crashes and burns. I mean, all you have to do is look at the last century. You had Mao, Pol Pot, Idi Amin, Hitler. You had so many of these different people. Yes, they're renowned in history, but they're not, they were horrible individuals, absolutely hideous people doing hideous things to others. And people are of this demeanor, like, oh, well, they're great. For some reason, if they've been able to conquer massive amounts of individuals or whatever, and in business, if it's like a Bernie Madoff, you know, by golly, look at what he did. Yeah, look at what he destroyed.
That's right.
So I think that your points here in the book are wonderful, and they really, really are important to be aware of. And you have throughout your book about take this evaluation, take this other evaluation, and let's look at where you are. And I think that many of these little sections that you have throughout the book is very, very significant. Because if someone takes the time to ask themselves that question, I think your point about your business life and your professional life, everything's going to be affected. You can't be one way in one environment and not have it flow over into another. Let's go about a shift here. We're going from controlling, being this micromanager, whatever it is that we're doing, and we have to know everything, we have to be involved in everything, we can't leave things alone or delegate to others without interfering with them. How do you move from that controlling persona to be able to have trust and to be inspired in what you do, to feel a sense of freedom?
Well, that's where the hard work comes in, right? And anytime you're dealing with these forms of head trash, and as you said at the beginning of the call, there are seven forms. There are two key things. Number one is self-awareness. Right, you have to become aware that you have the problem. And then number two is you have to have the willingness to do the hard work involved to bring about the change. And in any of the forms of head trash, and you mentioned specifically control, we can put into place a very robust plan with coaching, usually one-on-one coaching, that will allow you to move from this sense of control ultimately to trust and the ability to let go and let others flourish and shine. Now, the process is not easy, and rarely is it short. Some of this stuff becomes hardwired, you know, in our mm-hmm. neural pathways, grooves develop, and we've been behaving this way for so long that it's difficult to let it go. But as I said to you offline before we began the call, we do have examples of great turnaround stories and transformations, even with control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love the cartoon you have in here, and you've got a number of them scattered throughout the book. It was done by Schultz, and it shows the president of the company sitting with his staff at a table. He said, "I've gathered you all here today to tell you how displeased I am with the company's performance, and then to give you all raises for how badly I feel about having to do this." I'm going, oh, boy, does this resonate with so much stuff that's been made public today and that we're hearing on the news every day being hammered. And I go, my goodness gracious, what is it about guilt? What is it that makes it so tough for us to be able to look at what needs to be done? If we've made a mistake, letting somebody go, I mean, you have a wonderful story in here about a woman that was in charge of a particular business, and she had hired somebody that just wasn't good, but she was having a terrible time letting them go. How can we work with this?
It's a great question because in the book we talk about there are actually two forms of guilt. We call it the double-edged sword, right? Mm-hmm. So the first form is what we call guilt-ridden. This is the leader who at times freezes or becomes paralyzed, as the story you just cited, unable to make the right business decision because they literally would feel guilty about it. I mean, there's another story that we tell about a individual who hired a friend and over the years kept the friend and at one point promoted them to the head of sales of the company, obviously a critical position. And the person had absolutely no skill in sales
mm-hmm.
and would not let the person go because, hey, they're my buddy and they were here at the beginning of the company and I would feel terrible and, you know, his family. And that's sort of the guilt-ridden person. Then there's the guilt-wielding person. And that's the one who actually uses guilt as a weapon
mm-hmm.
To manipulate others, right? So, hey, you know, Donna, I got you that promotion last year. I think you better step up for me and do X, Y, and Z. Or do you remember when I did that for you, Donna? You know, I think you better really change your attitude and help me out here. And both of these forms are toxic. One's toxic to the individual. One is toxic to others. Ultimately, it hurts the business in the long run.
Paranoia. Oh, I love that word, because you can, your imagination with the term paranoia, you can just have such a good time with that word. It's just, it's a marvelous word. And your cartoon in the book on this, too, I just loved, because it's a woman who's sitting at a desk. She's calling, obviously, her best friend, and she's saying, my supervisor just told me that I got a promotion and a raise. Not to be paranoid, but what do you think she meant by that? I looked at that and I thought, oh, that is so typical. How many times do we have so little faith in ourselves that, just like this cartoon depicts, you get a raise, you're being recognized, and you're paranoid. What is it? What am I doing wrong? Instead of saying, wow, somebody's appreciating me. Gee, this is pretty cool. You know,
well, you know, that cartoon, Donna, was actually our fun way or comical way of depicting an actual story from Tisha's work with a young manager who attended a high-level meeting in her company and was praised effusively by the CEO of the company for a wonderful job that she did on a key initiative in the organization. It was a long-term initiative, and she led it beautifully. And, you know, public recognition and reward was, you know, rampant in this meeting for this person. And they left the room, and the young woman came to Tish and said, hey, Tish, you know, all those things he was saying in there, what do you think he meant by that? And Tish was kind of floored initially, like she thought she was joking. But she was dead serious. And Tish said, I think he meant exactly what he said. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of sad. I mean, the person literally was paranoid. And unlike insecurity, which is really the focus on yourself, paranoia is the focus outward. You know, high level of suspiciousness for the leader that really forces them to do one of two things. One, do everything so that no one can ever accuse you of something, or get stuck doing nothing because if you say something, it may be held against you. Mm-hmm. And there's a great deal of pain associated with paranoia in particular. It's very hard to live that way.
Your book, Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success, is really a surprise when you go into it in some respects, because it puts you in a positioning of being an observer, and then you can also be a participant as far as, you might say, self-examination goes. But saying to yourself, is there something I have been involved with where this scenario existed? How did I handle it? Did I walk away from it? What was it that pushed my buttons? What didn't push my buttons? I think it allows us to expand our thinking, especially in the working environment. And I know there's so many people that are so frightened in today's world of maybe stepping away from an environment that they've been in, where maybe they have someone who is of this dispositioning. Maybe they ought to mail them the book, you know, anonymously, and say, please read this.
Please read chapter 4. Yes.
Because lots of times people just don't get it, and they wonder why they cannot be effective in their business or their personal life, because it all dovetails. It all comes together. And I think the book Head Trash, Cleaning Out the Junk That Stands Between You and Success, boy, that gray matter between the ears sure can create a lot of challenges. But also, because we are human beings, we have the options to shift that hard wiring, maybe, that somebody indoctrinated us with at some point in the past. Timothy Thomas, you have a website. You and Tish Spilaro have a website called headtrash911.com. headtrash911.com. People can check out more information about you and your company, your wonderful team work that the two of you put together and do. And I think that this is really a very positive read whether you're concerned about maybe some issues you might have yourself. But more than that, I think it gives a different paradigm of viewing this stuff that often we do to ourselves and to those around us on all levels. So it's a good read. Thank you very much, Timothy, for being my guest today. Timothy Thomas, check out his website, headtrash911.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Thank you, Tim, again for being my guest. We will be coming back in just a moment.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance your physical needs with your busy schedule is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors. A bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. It can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. And as a weight loss appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used. No caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon or squatsponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting amazon.com or squatsponge.com. Visit amazon.com or squatsponge.com for more information.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And by the way, if you'd like me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. 888-627-6008. And I want to let you know who's going to be with me this week. We have got an amazing array of guests. And tomorrow, we are going to be talking about interplanetary travel. Now, the reason that I'm so intrigued with this is that this actually has happened. This isn't something that somebody made up. We're not talking about another Star Trek sequel. No, this is the real thing. The publication is called Secret Journey to Planet Serpo. Lynn Cassidy is going to be my guest. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about diabetes, also care for the feet. Now, this may sound a little strange, but we don't realize how important it is that you take care of yourself physically, number one. You hear me talking about it frequently on the show, of course, because I really believe in that. But why are the feet so important? You know there's 2,700 nerve endings in your feet? Mm-hmm. So we are going to find out a lot of information there. And then Jeffrey Beers, we're going to be talking about The Lost Season. This is a story about a professor and a bartender. I love the combination. So we'll be chatting with that on Thursday. And then Father's Day is coming up this weekend. So how to be a great dad no matter what kind of father you had. Now that's significant. How many times have people come from environments that were anything less than good? A lot of people have. A lot of people have gone through ugly situations. Male role models for boys and girls, it's so important. Good one. What if you haven't had one? Well, we're going to find out from Keith Zaffron about what can be done. Fathers are very, very important, and they need to know that. And they need to know that they can be a good father, regardless of what has happened to them. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, if you're like me, the weather, if it's been nice where you are, you decided when you looked out and you saw weeds climbing up past the windowsill that you knew it's time to get out there in the garden and to de-weed areas and to do the fertilizing and everything else. And if you are like me, the next day you wake up and figure out that you have muscles that you didn't even know worked. Maybe you got a little bit of a sunburn, and of course, you were the happy snack for whatever bugs happened to be flying around. And because of your being dirty and sweaty, they just say, yum, I have got something to snack on. Yes, yes, yes. Bug bites and everything else make it very easy. So I'm to be out there, and then after a while, see, I think I'll skip it this year. But I'll tell you what, there's a lot of rewards that come with it. And even though I'm making fun of it, and I'm telling you, the bod is just saying, please, no more of this. But it is really something that helps ground you. Have you ever noticed that when you're out and you're working in a garden, if you're under a lot of stress, that it has a way of calming you down? It has a way of connecting you with an inner part of yourself that becomes quiet. And if you actually go into a state of, I want to call it mindlessness. I find myself doing that when I was out pulling weeds that were like a foot and a half high out in an area of yard, and we've had so much wonderful rain, and it's just like they had their slurpees every day with the liquid gold that I talk about that we get here in the Pacific Northwest, and so they were just thriving. And I found that instead of looking ahead and seeing how much was in front of me, and I learned this a long time ago, I'd say, okay, I'm just going to work on this little section, and then I'll move to the next one, and I'll move to the next one. And then when I finally finished, I looked back and I realized how much I had accomplished. Well, I like to use that as an analogy about life. Sometimes we are only able to do a little square section of anything at a time. And we may look at a huge project and say, oh, my goodness, I just don't even know if I want to start this, because how in the world am I going to finish it? All you have to do is one little step at a time, one little step at a time, just being mindful about what you're doing, taking care of it, and keeping on, keeping on. And it's amazing how much you will be able to accomplish. And it's something I think in our busy world today, we get so caught up with multitasking. I raise my hand on that one. I don't know about you, but boy, I really, like so many women, will say, oh, I can handle this. Oh, I can handle that. And then I've got so much that I'm trying to balance. Have you ever seen the shows where the guys have the dishes on the top of sticks and they will do 12 or 14, or if they're fast enough, maybe they can do 20. And eventually you cannot continue to keep adding. At some point, you have to stop. And I have had to learn the hard way. Try not to say yes to everything. Try to learn how to say no, because if you don't, you're never going to get anywhere. You're so busy doing so many different things. And believe me, that was a hard lesson to learn, because I was taught, you're supposed to handle everything. This is your job. Da, 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 da. Well, sometimes you just have to step back and focus on a certain particular thing, and you just do that, and you do it, and you stay mindful until you get that done. Then you start something else. Now, I know for a lot of people that it seems like a waste of time, but it's that focus, that determination, that tenacity, which comes under the big D, discipline, that enables you to achieve what you would seemingly say was impossible. And another aspect, it takes time. So I don't know about you, but this weekend, what I did this past weekend, I took my watch off. I did an experiment. I took my watch off, and I went about doing what was on my list. And to my surprise, as I focused on each thing, without being so consciously aware of the time element, I didn't put myself into that box. I just did things until they were completed and in order, and I got so much more done. It was amazing. So I just wanted to share that little bit of insight with you. Oh, hey, I wanted to give you your summer horoscope today. Now, because there's 12 signs of the zodiac, I'm only going to be able to do a few, but I thought I would touch on that this morning so that we could get started with summer. Of course, it's already begun, but hey, this is fun. I always enjoy doing it. I do it about four times a year, and I just think it is a lot of fun. So we're going to be talking about Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. Yes, those are the three that we'll try to cover today before we get to break. So let's talk about those of you born under the sign of Aries. By golly, you are really, really getting certain things together in your life. You're just feeling invigorated because it's summertime. And you're saying, I am not only just going to give things to myself, I'm going to really be conscientious about what my priorities are. So for those under the sign of Aries, I think your personal life is going to be going in the forefront, but I think you also will apply that same attitude towards your working environment as well. Now, you need to play. That's right. You need to try some new things, maybe miniature golf. Maybe you need to become a rock climber. Maybe you need to find something that's going to be totally different, that's going to challenge you. Those of you under the sign of Aries, boy, when you decide to do something, you put a lot of energy behind it. So remember, you want to be aware. Being focused is great, but your personal life has to have a priority. You need to play a little bit. And by golly, go ahead and do the studying with money, because I think you're going to find yourself really becoming more successful with money as you put together a new plan for yourself. And saving is always a good thing to do, but being disciplined, taking those little steps, like I said a moment ago, can really help you financially become more independent. Those of you under the sign of Taurus, you're not known for being a weak lily. You are going to be about paying attention to how you interact with other people. You are going to say to yourself, I really want to have better relationships with people. I want to open my world to new associations. And I'm not saying you're going to buddy up on Facebook. I think you're going to take the time to develop some one-on-one personal relationships. And that's always good. A great way to do it is through your favorite hobby or something that you really have a passion for. Now, when it comes to money, you are really going to want to have financial independence in a big way. And this is something where if you feel like you need to take classes, you'll take classes on learning how to work with money. If you want to develop a program for your family or you're interested in looking at options at the way you could work with money, maybe you want to start a new business, by golly, you're going to start an interaction of education that's going to allow you to leverage that in a very positive way. Also, take time out to do some short trips. I think that the travel gives you a break. Leave your computer at home, your cell phone, maybe take along, but turn it off. Make it okay. The world is going to continue to evolve. Believe me, with you or without you, it's going to continue to rotate. So give yourself this gift. Now, for those of you born under the sign of Gemini, your family comes first. Your family is very, very important to you. And if there have been any disagreements, it looks like you're going to work hard at bringing people back together so that there is a better communication. And I really think that you want to invest some time in asking yourself, what is it you really want? What is your dream? Do you have a dream? Have you given up on your dreams? Have you shelved your dreams? And I think this is a good time for those of you under the sign of Gemini to take time to be with yourself. Take time maybe to sit down by a beach, take a journal with you, write out whatever it is that you would love to do. Maybe you want to be on an elephant in the middle of India going and photographing tigers. Or maybe you want to be rock surfing somewhere. I don't know. It's up to you. What's your dream? What resonates with you? You need to give yourself some time to bring that part of yourself out. When it comes to money, you're going to need to be prudent. You're going to need to be frugal with your money. Doesn't mean stingy, means frugal. You need to be thoughtful because money seems to go through your fingers like water. So you need to realize realize it's very important for you to gain an understanding about what is going to work best for you. And don't be fearful of getting old and not having any, because I think with the right kind of plan, you will do very, very nicely. Now, when it comes to job hunting, if you're looking for a job, you need to be adaptable. You need to understand that you've got skills that can apply to many different arenas of expertise. And so you want to find out what your options are if your first choice does not happen. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment, so don't go away. More good things to share. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance your physical needs with your busy schedule is always a challenge. Amino muscle snack time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino muscle snack time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors. A bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. It can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. And as a weight loss appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used. No caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Visit Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I have something about electricity that I wanted to share with you, and of course all of us are surrounded by it at all times. But there's been a study in England that is bringing home an awareness that we need to think about how we use energy, because it is affecting people in a very detrimental way. And this is something that I have been aware of for almost 20 years, and it's something that little by little is getting out into the mainstream of medicine, not because it's something that anybody really wants to get excited about, but it is something that's very much a reality. Now, because of electricity, we have lights, we are able to operate computers, we are doing all kinds of things with electricity, which is a godsend. I'm not down on that at all. However, there was this study that was published in England, and it was in a journal, Bioessays, that for thousands of years, we were up at sunrise and did most of our activities during daylight hours. When it was dark, we had little to do besides sleep. Now, this comment was made by Kathy Wise, and she's a research fellow in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. And she said, over the last century, we, because of the development of electricity, thanks to Thomas Edison and all of his researchers in his labs, that together as a team, they pulled us all into a level of reality, we have been able to stay up at night. This has allowed people to do so many things. One, that they can work at night. They can study at night. And she said, it goes against our natural circadian rhythms. Now, what are those rhythms? Those are the rhythms that tell us when it's time for us to rest. Those are the natural rhythms of the season. And this is something that I think all of us are aware of to one degree or another. She said, hormones like melatonin, insulin, and cortisol are affected that in a negative way when we're not aware of these rhythms. And I remember when I worked for a police department and I was involved with working graveyard shift. Every 3 months there was a change. We had, you know, your standard daytime hours, you had your shift, and then you had the graveyard shift. And I can remember, I couldn't adapt to the graveyard shift. My circadian rhythm did not like it at all. It was very difficult for me because this is my body. Now, there's some people I know, they love staying up at night. This is just the way their rhythms in their body work. Now, she said that there's a lot of evidence that shift workers have higher rates of breast cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Now, in 2005, in the Western world, they began to see a link, even though this was mentioned a long time ago, or actually in the early 1900s, there was research on this. But in 2005, that's when people in the medical community started paying attention. And she was studying the effects of jet lag on racehorses. And she said, worked with mice. She said it was amazing when they altered the exposure of these animals to light, to darkness. They found the animals invariably started gaining weight and their lifespans were shortened significantly. And she said, I thought I made a mistake about this. But she said, when I repeated the study, I got the same results. So those of us that are living more in the northern hemisphere, then, you know, we have longer, darker hours typically than most. And it is something, I know up in Alaska, people just really have a challenge with gaining weight. Because, well, up there, it's the weather, a lot of it, but it is. It's dark when you're out. When it's dark out, you're not usually going to go out and about. Well, these are the suggestions. They say if you keep a regular sleep schedule, go to bed and wake up at the same time on the weekdays and on weekends, it's very good. And in 2012 at the University of Munich, they found people that had a different weekday and weekend sleep schedule had higher odds of being overweight. And they said, be sure that you take time to make sure that your sleeping area, wherever it is, is plenty dark. And I know, my goodness, if you're living up in Alaska, you've got almost 24 hours of daylight there. So you may have to put darkened shades, something that actually allows your body to keep its same rhythm. And limit nighttime TV and computer use. And you have to do that yourself. But it's something that they are showing does make a difference. I just thought I'd share that little bit of a tidbit. Also, there are the facts that when you have a lot of electrical equipment in a room, you have your computers, you have your printers, you have all kinds of things that are operating, you need to be able to get out of those rooms periodically because you are being bombarded with all kinds of electrical frequencies and it does make a difference. Well, I wanted to share with you a story about a very fine man. His name is Bob Dotson, and you perhaps have heard about him because he has a show called The American Story. And it is something that he has really a passion for. And his story about how he got involved in this, I think, was very, very significant. He has a marvelous attitude about people. And he said, I find that everyone is exceptional. Everyone, I don't care what their position is in life, everybody is exceptional, and they have phenomenal stories to share. And he said, it is not surprising in the world that we live in today that it's very hard to get people that are in powerful positions, let's say, to slow down and pay attention to the men and women that are living their lives and not getting mentioned in newspapers, etc. And he said, I had to ask myself what made me slow down and listen. He said, because when he got started in the news business, he said, I was just like any other young reporter. I wanted to have a network reporting job or one day anchoring a national newscast. He said, I decided to take a different route. And he said, his story was one that he's not typically shared with people. But it began when he graduated from the University of Kansas. And this was back in 1968. He said he was sitting with his dad, and he said, like most young people, there wasn't very much conversation going on. And my dad never was one to have conversations with. He wouldn't talk in depth about anything. But yet in this one environment, this particular moment, after he had graduated from college, his dad said to him, I never went to college. I never graduated. And Bob was stunned. His dad was telling him this story. He said, that's hard for me to believe. He said, my dad was a very successful man, one of the hardest working people he'd ever knew. And he knew all about optometry. That was his specialty. And this is what his dad told him. His dad dropped out of school in fifth grade. His dad had abandoned his family. And so he said, my dad joined the Army and he never came back home. He said, I had to go to work to help support my mother and the rest of the family. He was in the fifth grade. He didn't know about this. Bob didn't know this about his dad. And he just made assumptions, like all kids do, that his dad just was very self-centered and very controlled. And, you know, it was hard to sit and listen to his dad's story. Well, I guess I'll have to continue it another time. I'll have to tell you the rest of the story tomorrow. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And yes, we'll continue the story tomorrow, and we'll find out a lot more than you ever dreamed. This is Donna Siebel. Have a fabulous day. You're the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. Remember that. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.